I think our personalities complemented each other pretty well. I was a lot more, aggressive and gunslinger. If you're not focused on winning, what are you focused on? So nothing's perfect. They're making tough decisions and living with past decisions. And so it's just part of the deal.
Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm Jeff Holman, your host, and so glad to be here today with Dan James joining us. He's got an awesome story. I was introduced to Dan by a banker friend of mine, and he told me that you have just a trajectory that's worth sharing. And so we're really glad to have you here today, Dan.
Yeah. I've worked closely with Ivan for a while, and it was awesome to get that intro. He's actually worked with me for quite a while, and I've seen a lot of the growth the companies I had. And so, glad to be on here with you.
That's awesome. It's fun, talking to bankers, being an attorney, talking to some of my finance friends. We all get to kind of see the back end of this, right? The behind the curtains, what's going on. And so when somebody comes and says, hey, Jeff, I've been watching this company, I've been working with this company for a while, you should talk to them. I'm all ears, right? Fantastic to finally connect, because I know you're super busy too.
Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Fantastic. Well, so wanted to ask you an initial question. This doesn't have anything to do with your businesses. I know we've got a couple businesses we want to kind of touch on before we talk about your breakout moment. But with all my guests, they're all really busy. They've done some incredible things. And I'm always really curious, what is it that keeps you going? Like, this is a grind being in this role. At least I'm going to say it's a grind. Maybe there's one or two guys who it wasn't really a grind for, but I haven't met them yet. What is it that keeps you going day to day, building, working, designing things, launching things? How do you do it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I've kind of gone through a little bit of up and downs through that as I recently retired from the company I founded and I'm now heavily involved in a new company. You've got to have that internal passion to see a result that's far enough down the road that it gets you excited about it. And you can wake up every morning and think, am I on the path to reach that achievement? I had the option to just fold and retire and start, taking it easy. And I learned very quickly that even if you're retired, life isn't fun if you're not being challenged, if you're not doing things that, get your blood boiling and going. And so I think that, regardless of where you're at financially or what your, bandwidth is, if you can find that, that core thing that drives you and keep your focus on that, it'll help you push through everything. Because I agree, it's always a grind. It doesn't matter what any business, you think, oh, that business is doing amazing, blah, blah. And then once you go and talk to them and realize that they're doing the same thing we are, they're grinding it out. Nothing's perfect. They're making tough decisions and living with past decisions. And so just part of the deal. That's what makes us unique. And it's awesome to hear other stories from other entrepreneurs that have been through a similar thing like me.
Yeah, it really is. And that's what this podcast is all about, is kind of bringing those stories to light. I'm curious. I've been thinking a lot lately about winning and talking with, other guests. And I've wondered for CEOs who are getting, clearly, let's just say you've had some wins. You mentioned you could retire or whatever. You've had some wins, right? And from the outside, we would all say those are definitely wins. But what's the mentality around winning? Do you think about, you're playing a game and you're trying to get these wins? Or is it just the grind is the grind and I just hustle? Like, do wins come into your thought process at all?
Yeah, definitely. If you don't have wins along the way, then there's nothing to get excited about. And so I think it's really important to celebrate wins. Clearly define what a win is. Because for example, we every day we have a daily huddle and we review yesterday's numbers. And if we win the day, we celebrate. We get excited. If you don't win the day, you got to keep your head down and figure out how to win the day next day. And so I think those moments of peak excitement and activity really kind of keeps your motivation there. And if you're not focused on winning, what are you focused on? So I fully agree with you there.
That's a great question. I sometimes wonder if I have the answer to that. If you're not focused on winning, what are you focused on? I'm not sure yet. But I don't know if I'm always focused on winning myself. That's why I love talking to people who really have that winner mentality, right? That mentality of there's a win today, there's a bigger win this month. So anyway, that's a theme I'm going to keep exploring with guests and on my own. I would love to hear about your business, Black Diamond Experts. This was a long time thing. This is the business that you started from scratch, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, kind of interesting story. So in high school, my first job was one of my friend's dad was an electrical contractor, Piper Electric. And actually, that founder just passed away last week. So I've been thinking about him a lot. But I got into that industry and I was working just as a helper on like an elementary school remodel. And it just kind of clicked. I enjoyed it. So then my senior year of high school, I was an electrician half the time, and I went to school half the time and was able to graduate that way. But I knew there was a ceiling. As an electrician, you can be as amazing as possible, but there's a ceiling, and it's, you know, it's not high enough to get me excited, you know. And so I always had a plan of starting an electrical business, and I just didn't know when that would time out. And so I went through, did my the schooling I needed to do to get the journeyman's license, and I got that done, you know, at a pretty young age. And then you have to have another 4 years to be able to get a master's license. And so I think I was around 28 when I got my master's license. And it was right 2008-2009 recession, where my everything was kind of going south. The boss I was working for at the time, he was a great guy, but he wasn't getting paid from his contractors, and he was, you know, on his way out. And I kind of had a choice, like, do I just go to another company and not have any control over, you know, whether that company succeeds or not? Or do I go out there and just start my own company? And then if I fail, it's on me. But I always knew that if it's something that I'm not as experienced in, and I'm a rookie in, or maybe, you know, I'm playing in a bigger arena than I'm used to, the way you can make that up is just by working harder. And I always had that mindset, like, if I'm underqualified for this specific situation, I'm just going to work harder to find a way to work through that. And so I started the company at the end of 2009. It was a rough couple of years. Luckily, early on, I was able to hire a couple of really good guys that have been with me throughout the whole way. And, you know, went through, started off doing new construction, dealing with contractors. And I remember so many days just walking out to the mailbox saying, please tell me the check is here. And I open up the mailbox. No check. Okay, how am I going to figure out payroll this week? It was brutal. And so I slowly started realizing, hey, I don't want to be a slave to these contractors that, you know, can pay you whenever it's convenient for them. Yeah. And so one of the guys I had hired had a lot of experience in the services industry. Worked for you know, a big company around here, and so he kind of convinced me, hey, services where it's at, and that way you're dealing with primarily homeowners or business owners and not contractors, and allows you to have, you know, better margins, more control over your success and everything. But it requires a different kind of skill set, because in the service world, you can be a great electrician, but if you can't communicate with customers and you can't sell jobs or you know, that type of thing, then you're not going to be successful. And so we had to learn how to, you know, train really good electricians. At the time it was electrical and eventually more. But teach them how to be good salesmen and be good communicators. And, you know, we'd have to learn some guys just are not meant to be salespersons, and they can do a great job just leading jobs. But then other people, you know, it comes naturally to them. You just got to be able to train them how to do it right. And so the big thing for me was getting away from the contractor world, where I had no control over how quickly I got paid, to every day it was on me and my team to produce the results we needed to be able to make payroll and continue to grow the company.
And when was that? Like, you started in 2009, and how long before you made that switch into the service industry?
That was probably around 2010 or 2011, but we were still just doing electrical at the time. I remember buying, you know, used vans with, you know, 200,000 miles on them. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have any money. I didn't have any loans or anything like that. And so we were just scraping by. I owned a lot of interesting vehicles back in the day. And anyway, in around 2016, I would say, I know you brought up the breakout point, and I would say that's kind of when it hit for us. So around 2016, I was looking for a marketing guy, and I ended up getting in touch with a general manager for an HVAC and plumbing company. At the time, we were just electrical, and I met him, and I'm like, dude, this is exactly what we need. I got you know, somebody that understands electrical, or I know electrical. He knew plumbing and HVAC really well, and he was looking to make a jump, and so I was able to hire him. And he had a lot different background than me. He, you know, was really smart in college. He went to accounting school. You know, it kind of had a different, you know, career path up to that point. So he had a lot of experience that I just didn't have. And so one of the first things he did was he told me to read a Good to Great book. And he's like, and so I never read a book in my life, but I could listen to books on Audible. And so I started listening to that book. And then I just got into a kick of just listening to book after book. And I started working with him closely. Like, he got in there and was looking at our books and was like, oh, this is a, you know, mess. And I don't know how he didn't get scared off, but he really helped us level things up on that front. And while I was going through the reading the books, I read a book from another home service founder named Mike Aguilero. And he had a coaching group and out in New Jersey. And so I decided to join that coaching group, went out there. And that's when I started really learning the next level of business from him. And he had you know, grown a big business. He had exited, and now he was teaching people how to do that. And so around that time, that's when we started doing HVAC and plumbing, and it was like starting two new businesses. And you know, had to learn it all over again. They're, you know, electrical and plumbing and HVAC, they're all similar, but once you get down into the details, they're a lot different the way it works. And so we you know, had to go through a lot of trial and error and getting that going. But once we got those departments dialed in, man, it was like I had three companies now to grow instead of just one. And we just started growing really quickly. And it was really exciting to be a part of that.
Well, that's fantastic. It's a wonderful overview. And I mean, you've lived it, so you're able to share it very quickly. But I want to step back just a minute, because you mentioned a couple things that kind of caught my attention. Excuse me. So first off, you know, maybe I missed the boat. In high school, I had a friend call me up and he's like, "Hey, come help me out. I'm working for this electrician. We're putting in light poles at this facility, you know, up north, and we're doing lighting. I think we did some schools and some retail. We're throwing these lights in the ceilings and we're pulling wire for this theater." You know, that's a missed calling. I went from that, and I loved it, and the guy was great, but I decided to go into engineering and some other stuff, and now I'm a lawyer. But you know, what a fantastic path. But the thing that where we do parallel, you said something about, you know, you make up for maybe what you lack by working harder. And I've said the same thing to people. And I remember talking to people about, you know, growing my practice. And I said, "Hey, listen, if I work this much harder, I see this much more in results. It's just, there's some magnification factor in it." So I'm really curious if you have a number that you've ever pegged that to. Is there, like, how much harder do you think you have to work as a percentage or hours or whatever you use? How much harder do you have to work to make to really see that kind of standout difference?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to put a percentage on it, but I would say, you know, your average, you know, person / you know, business owner, you know, they're only going to work, you know, maybe the eight hours a day, 9 hours a day, 10 or whatever. You know, they're going to, you know, make sure they have their holidays and weekends.
Maybe
and,
six. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe six on some days. And so, man, I would get to the office around 6 a.m. My one rule was always, this is when I was, you know, directly leading the technicians, was I never wanted to have them show up to the office before me, because I was the guy that had the plan. And so I'd always make sure that I'd get to the office early. And at the end of the day, I'd wait till everybody wrapped up, and I'd really zone in on what the schedule was for the next day. And so I had, you know, a ton of late nights. I used to be on call 24/7. And so I remember one, you know, Christmas Eve, a big snowstorm came through and my phone just started ringing. I'm like, "Honey, I just got to go do this." Went out and did some service changes and stuff. And so I was always, you know, looking for opportunities that would give me an edge, and just being willing to work harder, work the hours that other people wouldn't work, answer the phone when other people wouldn't answer their phone.
Yeah.
Those were little things that made a big difference in my success.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think in the trades, there's a lot to be said about being available, right? Especially home services. The things you do when something goes down, you've got to be available. If you're not the first to answer the call from the customer, then you're probably not going to get the job.
100%. Yeah. Mission critical to be Johnny on the spot. When the disaster strikes, you need to be there ready to help them out. And that's how you earn a reputation and you earn customers.
Yeah. So when you were early in building this, you know, 2009, 2010, how much of the, you know, because you had kind of a trajectory looking back, at least, right? You started out with contractors and you moved to the home services, and then you started exploring, you know, HVAC and other disciplines. How much of that do you think was something that you purposefully worked towards versus how much of that was kind of the result of being in the right place at the right time and things just kind of came together?
Yeah, great, great question. I mean, I always had the mindset that I wanted to grow a big company. You know, I wanted to have a company that, you know, I didn't want to be the guy that has five trucks and a few guys. I always wanted to go big on everything. So I always had a vision of big goals at the end. But for a while, it was just on electrical. And I was thinking, how can I scale to that level with electrical? And I started learning pretty quickly that you know, there's definitely a cap on how big you can grow an electrical business. And that was, and then we saw, you know, one of our competitors, NER at the time, they started doing HVAC and plumbing. And so then I'm like, okay, well, that might be something, you know, they're doing it. There's probably something there. And then I started looking into it and realizing, hey, that you know, you have the offset, the slow seasons, you know, HVAC gets slow when it's mild and, you know, but then when it's really cold or really hot, that's super busy. And so being able to use Like we would have HVAC helpers go help on electrical jobs when they were slow, or if HVAC is really busy, have the electrical guys come and help them out and stuff. And so there's a lot of benefits to you know, having, you know, three different verticals essentially. But yeah, and then I remember specifically when I was out at it was called CEO Ori, it was the coaching company, and I went there and I took on a break and I went and I drove to his building, and he didn't run anymore. He'd sold the company, but it was right off of a freeway, big building, tons of trucks coming in and out. And I was like, man, I need to build an empire like that. And I came back and we, at the time we were kind of in a small shop in South Salt Lake. And I remember coming back and saying, hey, we've outgrown this place. We need to build our empire. And so I started looking around, ended up finding this unique building right off the freeway. Or Salt Lake, called Ralph Warm Springs Road, and was able to get into that building. And within, you know, a couple of years of that, we call it the Empire. And within a few years of that, we were filling it up with trucks and vans and employees. And so that was a big vision that I saw. I remember very specifically, and I remember, you know, achieving it every day. We'd have every week we'd have our weekly meetings with the techs. I'd stand in my office, look out the window at all of our trucks pulling in and out, and think, you know, this is exactly what I had in mind, you know, years ago when I made that decision. So pretty exciting to see that happen.
That's awesome. What size was your business? Before that, like you said something about you didn't want to just have the five trucks. Like, how much had you grown before kind of this vision caught hold? What was your size? What were kind of the numbers of your business roughly?
Yeah, I'm thinking I was probably around $3 million in revenue or so when we were just doing electrical, which is, you know, pretty big for just electrical only. And then once we added HVAC and plumbing, we quickly got to, I think we went from like 5 or 6 million to 8 or 9 million, and then from them to 12 million. And then from there, grew up to, I think it was around 15 million. And then in 2021, right when I took out on partners, we were at 18 million. And then from then until 2023, we got up to 28 million. So we had some pretty big, every year we grew. And even through COVID, we were able to grow through COVID, which I know was a challenge for a lot of companies. But it was pretty awesome to see. But we were always aggressive on our goal setting. Luckily, my controller, Timothy, who works with me now at Wink, he was huge in helping me with the number side of it, tracking. You know, we'd do a budget planning at the end of the year. We'd come up with our numbers on what we need to hit every month and stuff. And then, you know, doing our best to hit those numbers. And so having that structure was really, you know, really helpful. And then just having, I had a lot of great team members. I mean, I was always really big on taking care of our employees, regardless of if it's, someone working in the call center or one of our managers. I always did the best I could to, you know, take care of them. And fortunately, they took care of me as well. And so it was a good win-win situation.
That's awesome. I want to hear more about Timothy, because I think having somebody who's there with you, struggling, pushing, setting goals, helping achieve the goals hand in hand is key from what I'm seeing with other scaling businesses. But before I do that, I had a question about the size of the business. When you say 3 million or 6 million, I'm really curious how many, I see the trucks running around, you know, for the different businesses. What's the average, you know, revenue for a single truck? How many trucks does 3 million translate into?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say depending on if it's electrical, plumbing, or HVAC, you know, somewhere between, you know, 250,000 and 400,000, you know, per truck. Is what you're seeing. So you kind of do the math off of that. Like electrical, there's not a lot of markup on the materials. And so a lot of electrical, you make your money on the labor side of it, where HVAC and plumbing, especially HVAC, you can actually make money on marking up equipment and stuff. And the equipment overall is just more expensive for HVAC and plumbing, and so that kind of, you know, that raises the overall revenue levels. But around 250 to 350, something like that, is a pretty standard, you know, per truck.
So if you're doing $3 million in electrical, or maybe have 10 trucks, but when you said, I think you got up to, you know, was it 23, 28 million eventually?
Yeah.
That's 75, 85 trucks going on. That's a huge growth, right? That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a ton of trucks. Yeah. We probably had, I think we had at one point close to 100 trucks, because it's not only that we had our trucks that the guys would drive every day, then we also have the warehouse trucks or the manager trucks. And so you factor that in. But usually when you're talking about the revenue for truck, it's more of revenue per lead technician in a truck. It's kind of the better definition of that, not just the truck itself. But But yeah, having that many vehicles on the road is quite the, it's a lot of work and a lot of risk having all those vehicles on the road. You're always paying attention to that.
Yeah, no, it's a symbol of the success and the growth, but also the liability and the insurance going on, right?
Yeah, yep, definitely.
Well, tell me a little bit more about working with, I think you said it was Timothy, right? Your finance guy, or
yeah.
Did you have, was he sort of a right-hand man for you, or what did your core team look like that you built this with?
Yeah, it's a great question. So within the first couple of years when I started the company, I hired Jared, who I'd worked with at another company, and he had a lot of home service experience, and he was a good friend of mine, so I hired him. He was one of the first guys I hired, and then I hired Jason, who was similar. We went to school with him, and we worked for similar companies, and those two guys ended up, being the primary drivers for Black Diamond, and were long time. And then in 2015, 2016, I was able to bring on Timothy, and his skill set was much needed. I just didn't understand that part of the business. I was just focused on growing revenue and doing the best I could. And he really helped me slow things down a little bit and be more strategic with our planning and our decision making. And I think our personalities complemented each other pretty well. I was a lot more aggressive and gunslinger, where he was more, hey, slow down, you don't want to, let's be smart about this. And so we worked really well. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the EOS business management system. But there's the visionary and the integrator. And we basically both fit those two seats very well. He was a great integrator, and I was a great visionary. And then I had Jared and Jason.
You're running fast, and he's like, hold on. Let me make sure the cash is there for this.
Yeah, or just make sure you're not missing something, and then he would always help me with meetings and stuff like that. And then Jared and Jason, they were dealing with the technicians. They were trying to keep these guys, these divas, some of them, happy, dealing with whatever the daily projects that come up or the issues that come up. We had some higher level salesmen, and we all know salespeople are very high maintenance, and so they were able to handle a lot of that for me, which was a big help. Because dealing with people and managing them correctly is takes a lot of bandwidth and a lot of time, and so having them there was huge for that as well. So that was kind of our core leadership team. We did have a couple other people, Michelle and Julianne, on the team as well. But having that leadership team doing the EOS, I mean, you could probably do a whole podcast on EOS. But
yeah,
have you ever read the book Traction before?
Yep, it's right over there somewhere.
Over there.
Traction and Rocket Fuel, yeah. They're great books.
Yeah, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Get a Grip or Traction. One of those two is the storyline of a company that, ran into somebody and they ended up getting introduced to EOS. It's kind of like a story about it. I listened to that book and I thought that was awesome. And then I read the other books that kind of showed you how to do it. And man, that was super powerful. And all the way up to when I took on partners, those guys were big on EOS. And we partnered with AnyHour, that they were big on EOS as well. So I'm a big fan of that. And it's not that hard to implement once you just got to believe in the system and you got to, follow it. But huge.
Spend the time. Yeah. Take some time and energy. So I'm curious because also, I've done a little bit of that with my team here, and we're a smaller team. And I know getting people to buy into the vision and to adopt the system and maybe adapt to the system is its own thing. Right. I'm really curious. I think you said at some point you went to this coaching, you joined this coaching community and you came back to your team and you're like, or maybe I'm confusing things. Maybe it was something else. You said you came back to your team at one point. You're like, I've seen what we want to be. Like, I've had the vision, like we need to grow. We got to get bigger. How did your team respond to that? Like, what was the messaging you brought back to them and what was their response?
Yeah. I mean, definitely that was the clear message I brought back. I was really pumped up at the time on that and seeing that, really excited me. And it took me a little while to get the team excited about it, because you're the one coming up with the ideas. And a lot of times they're the ones that have to implement it. And so if they don't have buy-in on it, then it's not going to get implemented right. So Kevin, we used to have our leadership team meetings were at 6 a.m. on Friday morning. And I can't remember how many years we did this for. And I don't know, looking back, I'm like, why the hell was I waking up at 5 a.m. for this? But at the time, I didn't want the EOS process / leadership team meeting to you know, drag into the rest of the business and slow the rest of the business down. And so, and all the technicians, everybody shows up usually around 7 o'clock. And so we would, we did those meetings for a while, that early in the morning. Those meetings, you know, the system is super powerful. If you can get everybody on board and buying in on it, doing one-on-ones is really critical. You know, the weekly non-negotiable meetings that you have every week, the level 10 meeting, that's, you know, that's super impactful. So yeah, kind of a combination of those things really helped me get the rest of the team to buy in on it and helped us, you know, work through, you know, problems as a team and not just always Dan's solution. It was more of a, what's the leadership team solution to this instead of just you making all, you know, me making each of the calls, you know, so.
Well, that's awesome. So I'd love to hear about the moment where, you know, just, and maybe we've gone through it a little bit, but I know there's usually some lead up. There's usually some like, hey, we're hitting this wall, and then you kind of maybe listen to that book, or you join that group, or you, you know, implement this new system, and all of a sudden you're like, the framework changes, the mindset changes on the team, and all of a sudden you experience growth that you haven't seen before. How would you describe your, you know, one of your breakout moments in the business?
Yeah, here's another, this is a really big one. So when you're, at least when we were growing really fast, I was dumping most of the profits into the company, and I was prioritizing growth over profit. And because I was, you know, trying to grow, but we started running into our own ceiling on that front in, you know, right around right when COVID happened, a little bit shortly after that. So anyway, kind of what happened in our industry around that time is private equity started getting involved and started, you know, buying up companies, and then COVID happened, and that kind of made the home service world even more attractive. So we had all of a sudden it was pretty clear to me that every company, all the bigger companies were going to be PEO bought soon because of, you know, the multiples were great, and it would be a no brainer for people not to. And so that was around 21. And so I went, met with, actually I had a PE firm reach out to me and talk to me and, you know, told me this, that, and the other, kind of got me excited about it. And so first thing I did is I called my coaching company. I said, hey, this guy from PE company wants to talk to me, blah, blah. And he's like, you know what? You need to talk to this guy first. And I'm like, okay. So he linked me up with a guy kind of like yourself, a broker / I can't remember, M&A transaction guy. And so I got linked up with them. I started the process of, you know, doing our own little mini QOV with them, and really, you know, started diving into the numbers, and it very quickly started realizing that, hey, you know, you could have an amazing top line, and but if your bottom line isn't great, then your company's really not worth that much money. And so it really had me, you know, open my eyes a little bit to like, hey, I need to get my EBITDA up. I need to stop being, I need to, you know, put profits over revenue. And that was a really hard thing for me to do. And right around that time, so once we did the mini Q of V, I met with a few different PE firms, and none of them, I didn't feel good about any of them for various reasons. One of them, I felt like our team just wasn't ready. I felt like the culture shock would be, because we were always, you know, all of our competitors, the bigger ones, they were part of a Nexstar coaching group. We weren't part of that. We were always kind of the, you know, I looked at us kind of like the new kids on the block that were a little bit rougher, you know? And so I felt like, you know, going right straight to private equity would just be, you know, a big culture shock. And so I kind of, and my EBITDA wasn't looking great at the time. And so I kind of was like, hey, let's just keep on meeting every month. We'll do the roll forward, see how we're looking, and take it from there. So that went on through 2021 until, you know, I'd say spring or maybe early summer. And my guy, he gave me a call. He's like, hey, I got these guys I want you to meet with. And I'm like, okay. So I went and met with them, and it's four guys that, you know, two sets of partners that had sold their companies to private equity in California, did very well. They're, you know, had a, you know, a decade or two on me on age and experience. And, so I met with them and just kind of started talking, because I never wanted to take on partners. You know, I heard horror stories about, you know, this guy's took on partners and this happened. So I was really, really, you know, I was against that. But once I kind of met these guys and I started seeing like, hey, these guys knew how to do it. You know, these guys knew how to grow and they knew how to make money at the same time. And so, so more and more I got to know them, the more excited I got. And then in 2021, I was able to bring them on, where I essentially sold 100% of the company and we created a new company. And then I bought in 35% of that company at that time. And so, so I still had a lot of skin in the game. And then I went through tough training. I mean, we went from, after we closed it, came pretty clear to me that I needed to level up a lot, and that my leadership team needed to level up a lot, and we had a lot to do to reach our goals. And so then we started working on improving the bottom line, and making the company a more attractive for a future investor.
That's what happens, right? You've been running this business for 2009 to 2021 up to this point, right? And so you've got 12 years, you've got a dozen years of this, 6 a.m. meetings with your team, 6 a.m. to, we'll just call it 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., but you probably were working more than that, as a lot of owners do.
Yeah.
I mean, So there's so much going on. What do you think throughout this process? I love that you talked about quality of earnings and like rethinking your financials and, you know, what are we really going just for all out growth, or do we need to have some balance with the profit? Like, what do you think were maybe your one or two takeaways, the big lessons or the shifts that you, the insights that you got from going through that process where you're like, oh, grow, wait a second, pause, let me think about this. I think we got to tweak this or shift that.
Yeah, I specifically remember when I was meeting with these guys before we partnered, and they told me they had, you know, an EBITDA at 28%. And I'm like, how the heck can somebody pull that off?
Your jaw just like drops. You're like, what?
You know, like, how can you do that? And so we quickly learned a big part of it was just charging the right price. I mean, we were, we were underpriced in the industry, which helped us grow a bit, but it also, you know, was hurting us at the same time. So we had to do a combination of raising our prices to where, you know, to a point where we actually had a chance to be profitable if we sold jobs at these prices, and then really being more smart about your COGS and your everything below the line. I mean, being smarter about, do we really need to have this expense every month? Can we be smarter about this? You know, we also locked our price book where it made it, or the only way a technician could change the price is by discounting it, and that affected his or her commissions. And so, that was a really tough thing to get the guys to do that. But once we did it, and we started seeing the results, we're like, okay. And so, there were so many things that those guys helped us implement. And at the time, either myself or Jason or Jared or Timothy was like, wait, I don't know, this doesn't make sense. And then we'd go through the process and be like, okay, I see the light now. I understand why we did that way. And so. So that last, you know, the time from 2021 until 2023, when we ended up selling to private equity, it was constantly reviewing. Every month we'd have to do our roll forward on the QOV, and we'd have to, you know, see if we're actually growing the EBITDA or not. And so we were just really paying attention really closely to the bottom line. And that takes a lot of energy and a lot of focus and discipline. And so, and I quickly learned why some businesses just don't ever become a whole lot, while other businesses become amazing. And a lot of it's just, it goes down to the basics. If you don't sell it for the right price to begin with, how are you ever going to have a good profit margin if you didn't sell it for the right price? Because even if you sell it for the right price, you've still got to have the install go smoothly. You've got to be smart about this, that, and the other. But if you start with the wrong price, you're never going to hit the profitability because it's not possible. So that was something that was really impactful for me that helped us out a ton.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. We had another guest on, Stephen, talked about pricing. He's more in the e-commerce field, but pricing your products, your manufacturing right up front is the key, according to Stephen, to having that successful business. So how long did a change like that take for your team to adopt? Because those are hard things. Like you're in your groove, you're doing awesome. You know, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing, but you want to shift it to do it maybe a higher quality or whatever. How long did that type of shift take for your team to adopt for those big shifts?
Yeah. I mean, we implemented it pretty fast, but I'd say for it to fully stick, you know, at least 6 months and quite a few. We learned that once we implemented the new prices and locking the price book and being more strict about things, we just found there was quite a few employees that just weren't a fit for us anymore. And so we, at the same time while we're doing this, we ramped up our recruiting so that the guys that we were hiring, you know, were a good fit for us. And so we lost quite a few guys throughout that process, but we were hiring new guys that were now believers in the system that we built and a lot more on board with it. And so I'd say, you know, within 6 months, I think we started gaining some good traction, and, you know, and after about a year or so, I think we really had things, you know, running smoothly. But it was a big transition, and it takes time and a lot of focus and effort.
Yeah. No, you make it sound, not that you're, I don't think you're trying to paint it as an easy process, but we're talking about it in such a condensed form. It almost sounds like it was relatively easy, but I'm sure it wasn't that way on the day to day. It was, you know, the hard work and the grit and the discipline that, you know, above and beyond that added percentage or what have you, above and beyond what other people are willing to do to achieve that. And it worked out. So you sold in 2023, right?
Yeah, so in 2023, well, so from 2021 to 2023, I was in like, I went from doing a huge, you know, Q of E and everything with these guys to then from 2021 to 2023, every month we were doing a roll forward on your 12 months. We, you know, growing or we not, we went through multiple diligences. We actually almost sold to one company earlier that year and got through the Q of E, got through everything. And then it was right when the banks in California were going, went under. I can't remember
what SVB, Silicon Valley Bank. Yeah, that was a major disruption.
Yeah, that and these guys were heavily, you know, they were going to finance it. And so it didn't work out. And then we luckily found, you know, this other group that was ready to rock on it. And we were able to quickly get that done. But man, the process, if you've ever gone through the full diligence and a full Q of E, it's a big deal. It takes a lot of energy. You can't really be telling the whole team about what you have going on. And so you've got to be smart about that, and then it's just it's a headache. And so I'm a firm believer in having the company that helped me out, our broker who did both deals for us, having him there was so valuable, because he's telling us, you know, he has a pulse on the industry, what the multiples are, what kind of things these groups are looking for, and he could give us that insight so that we could turn that insight into how can we do that. And so having that coach in the corner to help us out was mission critical. I think if anybody's ever trying to sell a business, the worst thing you could do is just do it on your own, because there's just so many things that could go south on you. And so hopefully that helps clear some of that up for you.
Yeah, thank you. And you haven't stopped since then, right? You got your new project you're working on, Wink Toolbox. Is that right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, kind of another interesting story. So back in the 2016 18 range, we were using a software that was from Australia called ServiceMate. It was amazing field service software, but it had its limitations, and it was like no one knew about it in the U.S. But I had dug and found it. And that software, the only way you could get reports out of that software is you had to use this Wink. At the time, it's called Wink Reports to do that. And so I had them build us a very in-depth reporting and commissions process that's what we use to do all of our commissions every week, and then to do our monthly reporting for the guys. And so I got to know their software really well. And then in 2020, we switched over to Service Titan, which is kind of like the Salesforce of our industry. And very way, way more expensive, but a much deeper software. And so we made the switch to that platform, and which was very difficult, but we got through that. And then once the dust settled, I'm kind of like, man, I'm seeing all these holes that Service Titan, the best software, has that, you know, their reporting is not nearly as good as the reporting I had before. There's, you know, these automations that suck, this, that, and the other. And so that's when I was like, I called up Johan, one of the founders of Wink, and I'm like, hey, we should, if it's working in Australia, there's no reason it can't work in the USA, but we have to build the connectors to be able to do it. And Service Titan, it would be such a big connector to build. And so he was like, well, we don't have the finances to do that or whatever. And so that's when I was like, hey, I'll be your angel investor. I'll start investing. I had no ability to really help the company at that time, other than, you know, a little bit of advice here and there, and then making, you know, some investments, but they took it and focused on building out this integration with Service Titan and some other USA companies. And so that's kind of been going on since 2021. And once I retired from Black Diamond in 2024, I've kind of jumped right into that. And it's completely different. I'm going from a home services arena where, you know, it's very, you know, you sell a job and you move on to the next one, to now the software world. It's just a completely different beast. But it's been super fun to learn. And there's a lot of similarities that apply to both businesses. And it's really awesome for me to, we're helping other businesses like I was back in the day, you know, like when I got coaching, you know, from that coaching group in New Jersey, we're helping with some of that type of stuff for, you know, companies that are now growing that, you know, might be smaller or need some advice. And it's awesome to be able to step in and say, hey, I've been there and done that. This is what we did. And this is what will probably help you out. And they're like, oh yeah. You know, and so it's not just the software that they value. It's the combination of software, and they've got myself, Jason, and Timothy all work together on this as well to help, you know, help customers figure out how to scale and grow their home service company. So that's kind of a new thing, and it's been pretty exciting for me.
Yeah, going to be on the other side of the table a little bit. I'm really curious, because you've been through all the stages from the time you started an employee, you know, getting your journeyman's, your master's, starting your business, growing, scaling, adding other businesses to it, perfecting it, selling it, you know, now you're doing the other side, investing. Like, where are some of the points that you've found the most fulfillment, do you think?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, clearly when you have ownership in something, it gives you a different level of, you know, excitement and anxiety versus when you're just working for somebody else. And so I've always enjoyed, I never wanted to be, I want to be in the top, you know, 5 or 3% or whatever. I've never wanted to be just your average guy that did pretty well for himself. If you can't, let's just say you're early on and you've been, you know, doing a certain thing for a couple of years, you don't have a ton of experience. It's really hard for you to go and start up a business if you haven't, you know, learned the ropes of that business elsewhere before that. And so I think that's probably one of the reasons a lot of startups just don't work out, is maybe they just maybe jumped in too soon, or they weren't ready for it or whatever. Having, being an expert at that specific industry gives you a huge advantage when it comes to making that business successful versus just, you know, trying to, you know, copy somebody else where you haven't really done that type of stuff before. So.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome. I've been able to just enjoy pieces of the journey along the way. And our audience gets to hear some of these nuggets of insight and you know, golden counsel, I would call it, from you. What are some of what's maybe the thing that you would leave with somebody who's 5 or 8 years behind you in this journey? They've maybe started their business. They're going through the struggle. They're trying to grow. They're trying to get their team on board and maybe trying to keep their team, but seeing that they have to replace some of their team. And like what would be one or two of those tidbits, those words of advice that you give to them?
Yeah, I mean, clearly being able and willing to work harder than the next guy is always going to give you an advantage, like we talked about before. Having the right team, having a good leadership team is a world of difference, because if you've been able to level up, you know, 3 or 4 of the people that you work with closely to be working at a high level, then it allows you to delegate, to elevate, and really focus on the stuff that only you can, that you're the best at. And so I'm really big on, you know, leveling up employees and, you know, trying to figure out what, because some employees, they don't have the drive to become a service manager or to become an owner at some point. They just want to, you know, make some good money, go home and hang out with their family, which is totally fine. Other guys might be, you know, very, very aggressive. They want to, you know, sell as much as possible or whatever. You know, those are two different types of mindsets, and you got to be able to learn at a, you know, early stage what kind of person that is, and make sure you kind of put that person in that scope of work or that focus. So people is huge, and getting, you know, getting them leveled up, and then systems and processes. I spent years and years just winging it, you know, Dan's way. Everybody used to joke about that, and some of it worked out, but a lot of it didn't. But there's no, if you can't duplicate something until you build the system and a process, and then you train on that process and implement it. And so at any stage of business, the more you can, more systems and processes you can be able to set up to delegate to others, the more that you can delegate to others and focus on the big picture for you, or focus on your EBITDA, or focus on whatever that might be. And so other than that, I mean, just remember that most businesses, that's what the bottom line comes down to, is your EBITDA. And I wish I would have been more focused on that at a younger age. I think I could, you know, made a more valuable business if I was more focused on that. And so I think really understanding what EBITDA is and how, you know, valuations are. And so you can always have a pulse in the back of your head, like, hey, is this decision going to help the bottom line, or is this decision not going to? And so, those are a few tips I have.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, that sounds like 3 more podcasts, maybe master classes. You know, get the right people, get the right processes, understand the real drivers in the business. That valuable advice right there. Well, Dan, I hate to cut this off because I'm really enjoying the story, but we really appreciate you being on the show. It's been a learning experience for me to hear your story, and I'm sure for our audience to be able to hear the story and some of those tidbits that you shared, those pieces where you learned something that you hadn't known, or you leveled up from somewhere you hadn't been. So thank you for sharing that with us, and thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I've watched a few of your podcasts already. I look forward to watching more of them. It's always great hearing stories from other people. And if you can watch one podcast or listen to one book and get one big nugget out of that book or podcast, then it's well worth it. So I'm excited to see more of your podcasts. You're doing a great job.
That's very kind of you, Dan. Thank you so much. And to our audience, thanks again for joining us this week on the Breakout CEO Podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies, to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.